Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean.
There's no place like home. No place like home. There's no place.
Oh, we're home. Anyway, hello, how are you? And happy Monday. Glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, really two big news stories that we are following today. And one is the battle over immigration and the battle over separating children from their parents. And how nobody ever on the Democratic side wants to solve a problem completely, ever. Nobody wants children separated from their parents. And the reality is nobody in the Democratic Party, frankly, wants solutions to immigration that would ultimately ensure it never happened. And we'll get into that today. We have the Inspector General Horowitz now before the Senate committee of Charles Grassley. And it's getting really interesting. And you have two obvious competing narratives in all of this. I'm going to go over everything that's been happening here. You know, as a matter of fact, John Cornyn is now speaking. Let's just dip into what he's asking.
Charged conduct. He erred when he said that no reason, he usurped really the role of the Attorney General in the Department of Justice when he said that no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges under the facts, and that he did violated a number of Department of Justice policies and norms. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Make it 445.
I think your opinion was certainly reinforced by op-ed pieces by former Attorney General Holder, when he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post, and by Jamie Gorelick and Larry Thompson, former Deputy Assistant Attorney Generals, in an article they wrote, James Comey is damaging our democracy. The Rosenstein memo that was written by the Deputy Attorney General, forwarded to the Attorney General, and then attached, I think, to a letter whereby the president informed Mr. Comey that his services as director of the FBI were being terminated. Substantially similar to what you found in your report, correct?
We're going to be more productive for you information-wise because we're literally taking notes of all of this. It literally started, the Inspector General maybe started talking about 45 minutes ago, and I have a summary of up to that. But let me bring you first up to speed on everything that is happening here. And one interesting note as we get going is that looks like the usually talkative James Comey doesn't want to talk about the IG report. And Loretta Lynch apparently also appears to be stonewalling. And it was interesting because Charles Grassley gave a statement at the very beginning of these hearings. And he said that it's pretty interesting because he invited all of these people to actually come before the committee. And I find that pretty interesting and that they invited former deputy FBI director Andrew McCabe to testify, and his lawyers said that he would rely on his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination and avoid answering any questions there, and he would invoke those rights. Comey's attorney told Senator Grassley he's out of the country, and it turns out he was in Iowa over the weekend. According to his Twitter feed, he seems to be having a wonderful time, Senator Grassley said. Now, that's the second time since he was fired that Comey refused an invitation to testify before Senator Grassley's committee voluntarily, and He points out he had plenty of time for his book tours and his television interviews, but apparently no time to assist this committee, which has primary jurisdiction over the Justice Department. And then he pointed out Loretta Lynch was also a no-show. And then he pointed out the need for transparency does not end when senior officials are fired or that they quit. And we'll find out if ultimately they get pulled in to testify at some point. But, you know, being AWOL is pretty interesting. You have two key Russiagate witnesses now saying that the FBI tried to entrap the Trump campaign. And, you know, this is getting more interesting by the day also. I'm going to get into that in the course of the program. But let me just give you a quick summary of everything here. Jonathan Turley, I thought, made an amazing point. And also, a lot of people made the point about the two-tier justice system that we have. The facts, as I said to you all last week, don't change as it relates to the Hillary Clinton email server case. Hillary Clinton did all of those things, violated all of those laws. And as the inspector general says in his report, it's not his duty to determine or ascertain or second guess the, quote, prosecutorial discretion that were used by the people involved in these decisions. That's not what he was tasked with. Over time, and I think this is only the beginning of a process, because now witnesses are going to come in and they're going to give us, shed more light into everything that has happened here. But when you look and you compare and you contrast, you know, the voluntary nature, the haphazard way in which this investigation was handled, coupled with the obvious political bias of so many at the upper echelon level of the FBI and Department of Justice, you begin to see that it basically was, well, I won't say necessarily a word conspiracy, but there's no doubt that they fixed an investigation to allow one candidate, the favored candidate, to go forward. And then they went literally balls to the wall against the other candidate, using every power that they had as it relates to subpoenas and as it relates to warrants and as it relates to digging into unrelated matters. And Loretta Lynch never put any type of special counsel into the investigation into Hillary, which should have been done from the beginning. And, you know, Jonathan Turley makes a point 2 months ago, based on leaks from the Mueller investigation, you have a wave of these media reports claiming, well, that because Mueller had come up empty on Trump-Russia collusion, now he's shifting his focus to obstruction of justice. But if obstruction now is Mueller's last hope here, then his investigation is now essentially over. And Turley makes this point. And, you know, and Mark Levin made a great point. He goes, you know, if anybody in all of this in any way is guilty of any tampering with the investigation, it's the FBI upper echelon. It's the DOJ. It's what they did in this case. It's how they have handled everything, because it was certainly designed to do everything possible to help Hillary and hurt Trump. Anyway, Turley says, to me, the obstruction claim involving Comey was always difficult. He said, after the IG, it's become virtually incomprehensible, because the IG said that Comey was insubordinate and that he deviated from policies and he violated FBI policy. And all those are a good reason to fire Comey. Then he added, the problem that's going to come up for critics of President Trump is that this dog just won't hunt when you've both the IG and the deputy attorney general saying he deserved to be fired. You can't assume everything against him, or anything, basically. And Turley also said that if Mueller plans to use Comey's firing as a way of proving obstruction, the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein should be forced to recuse himself from the case, because if Mueller was really going after obstruction based on Comey, then Rod Rosenstein would have had to recuse himself. And Rosenstein said if Mueller told him he was a witness, well, he would remove himself. And he hasn't done that, which makes me think one of two things. Either Mueller's ignoring conflicts of interest, or he's not seriously pursuing that angle. Well, then you have to add into the whole thing the whole Peter Strzok equation. Because Peter Strzok, who's now saying, oh, I want to testify, I'm willing to testify before committees. Good, come on in, testify. And I'm not asking for immunity. Good, don't ask for immunity. Because he's got himself one big political problem, as he, too, was the one that literally jump-started this whole Russia investigation long before, it appears, with the two spies in the campaign, anybody ever knew. So their timeline doesn't work out either, and that's not going to work in their favor. You know, hours after the FBI report is released, Christopher Wray, the FBI director, says we're going to require all of our senior executives from all around the world to convene for an in-depth training specifically focused on learning the lessons that we should learn from this report. Then we're going to train every single FBI employee, new hires, veterans alike, on what went wrong so the mistakes won't ever be repeated. Now, whether it's a large business or a big government like the FBI, yeah, all personnel matters and are handled by what's usually called the Human Resources Department. And I guess at the top of the agenda for the Human Resources Department is hiring of new employees as well as training and retraining to make sure that they're in compliance. Well, guess who is now a supervisor in the FBI's Human Resources Department? Well, apparently it's Peter Strzok. He's now considered one of the FBI's most experienced counterintelligence agents. He's now been reassigned to a supervisory job in the Bureau's Human Resources Division after Robert Mueller had to let him go. Why hasn't had to let a lot of other people go like Jeannie Ray and Andrew Weissman and others is beyond any comprehension I have. So the Human Resources Supervisor, Peter Strzok, will now play a major role in retraining FBI employees on how to remain unbiased. Well, that's going to be interesting. And Comey told the IG that Clinton lawyers intimidated DOJ prosecutors. Why wasn't this reported before? Because it's in the IG report, Comey complaining that Hillary's lawyers, quote, intimidated prosecutors at the Department of Justice. Now, if that's the case, why can anyone explain why he didn't recommend charging them with obstruction? Why? Because that would have ruined the cover-up? That would have ruined the agenda? Anyway, Comey and other Bureau employees were telling investigators that the IG, they thought the Department of Justice prosecutors were intimidated by Hillary's high-powered legal team. Well, when has that ever happened before? I don't see that they're so intimidated with Mueller's campaign over Rudy Giuliani and the Trump defense team. Anyway, Comey, Baker, other FBI witnesses told us they believed the prosecutors were overly cautious about obtaining the laptops because they were intimidated by high-powered defense counsel like Beth Wilkinson, according to the IG report. And the report also describes other FBI witnesses who made the same claim, including Strzok and Page, whose text messages in the report revealed their political bias against Trump becoming president. Quote, some FBI witnesses told us, consistent with text message exchanges between Strzok and Page, that the FBI was concerned that literally someone was concerned that they were prosecutors were intimidated by high-powered attorneys representing Clinton. And then it goes on, Strzok told the prosecutor one, who handled most of the negotiations with counsel, is extraordinarily competent, but he believed more senior government officials should be involved in deciding how hard to push counsel. And two relatively vague conclusions came from the FBI witnesses. The facts don't change in this case. Hillary violated the Espionage Act, mishandled and destroyed top secret classified special access programming information. She then was subpoenaed. And then she violated the subpoena. Why? By deleting emails and bleach bidding, acid washing the hard drive, and then busting up devices. And then she got a pass on all of it. And while the inspector general can claim all he wants that there's not political bias, it reeks of all political bias from top to bottom, from inside and out and head to toe. It just is what it is. And anybody that tells you any different is just not telling you the truth. All right. There's a lot of ground to cover here, not the least of which is, you know, the FBI literally now you can conclude one thing. They had an agenda, those that mattered. And they interfered with this election. And that was their goal. And they would have gotten away with it if Hillary won. And the lead FBI investigator calling Hillary president 4 months before the election. That's in the IG report. And Peter Strzok wants to testify. Let him testify. And now there's a bigger showdown with the Department of Justice. And now apparently Trey Gowdy and Paul Ryan have been are now involved in this. We'll tell you about that when we get back.
With only a kite, a house key, and wet hemp string, Benjamin Franklin captured lightning in a bottle. Over 260 years later, with a little resourcefulness, ingenuity, and grit, we're not only capturing energy from the sun and wind, we're storing it, ensuring Americans have the energy they need whenever they need it. Learn more about the nation's leader in energy storage at NextEraEnergy.com. Stamps.com.
And think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home.
All right. You all think you're funny in there. 800-941-SEAN. Well, when you're on the other side of the world and you're doing a radio show at 3 a.m., you kind of want to get home and get back to your regular schedule. That's what that's all about. We have the IG report. You know, you just keep reading through it and you find nugget after nugget after nugget. You know, top DOJ officials tipping off Hillary Clinton's campaign on the email probe. Now, that would be big news in and of itself alone. And there's so many of these nuggets in there. And I'm gonna break all this down throughout the program today. But when the report uncovers that a top DOJ official is tipping off the Clinton campaign, just like, you know, this relationship with the media, golf trips and dinners and all the fun that they're having, you know, it's pretty unbelievable. But the Inspector General report shows that a former DOJ official faults them for sending Hillary Clinton's campaign, John Podesta in particular, a heads up about the release schedule for Clinton's emails, as he also tried to get his son a job with the Clinton campaign. That's how incestuous this whole swamp is. Anyway, the assistant attorney, General Peter Katzik is his name, demonstrated poor judgment. Poor judgment. Would that be how any of us were treated? And this goes to the whole heart of everything involved here. Why does this matter? Because if you did any of the things Hillary did, you would be in jail. If you obstructed the way she obstructed, that, you know, it's so funny how the media reacts when I say, well, if Robert Mueller's asking for your phone, if I ever said to those people that they should just delete the emails and acid wash their hard drives with bleach bit and then have an aide break up your devices with hammers and take out the SIM cards. If I ever said a bad idea, it's not going to end well for you. Just kidding. Just saying it sends the media overboard. But the fact that all of this happens doesn't impact them at all. And now we've got a media and the FBI in this incestuous swamp relationship. And now the Clinton campaign tipped off by DOJ officials in this incestuous swamp.
Found that several of the people investigating Secretary Clinton for using personal email were doing the same thing themselves. Each agency and every employee has an obligation to comply with the Federal Records Act. Question number one to Mr. Horowitz, in light of the law's record-keeping requirements, how did you try to get access to their personal devices or accounts?
One of the challenges we had, as we note in the report, is that to gain access to personal emails would have required either a grand jury subpoena or a search warrant, given the facts of this case. And so we were limited, because our administrative subpoena authority doesn't cover this, to ask for voluntary cooperation. We were given oral representations. We were not given access to the email accounts. Yeah.
Former Director Comey said on television that the Inspector General interviewed him about the handling of his memos of conversations with President Trump. Some of those memos contained classified information. Comey said he did not expect a report on his handling of classified information because, quote unquote, that's frivolous. I don't happen to think that it is frivolous. Question number one to Mr. Horowitz, are you investigating Comey's handling of his memos, and does that include the classification issues, and should Mr. Comey expect a report when it is complete?
We received a referral on that from the FBI. We are handling that referral, and we will issue a report when the matter is complete, consistent with the law and rules a report that's consistent and takes those into account.
All right, that from the Inspector General Horowitz, and of course the FBI Director Wray is involved here. We find out two more Hillary investigators were having an affair in all of this. Agent One, remember, five now are being investigated. Agent One was adamant that the fix was in, admits that Hillary's IT guy lied his ass off. Agent number two, in this case, screw you, Trump, three. And then the same one says, if Hillary loses, I'm going to be walking around with both my guns and likely quitting on the spot. And I guess you know what James Comey's vaunted Hillary email investigative team was busy doing when they're supposed to be investigating Hillary. You know, the facts don't change in this case. FBI rank and file, I'm predicting and have been predicting, they're going to end up being the heroes in all of this. They're the ones that are going to come forward and talk about how protocol was broken. They're going to be the ones that come forward, and they are going to describe how it was taken away from them, meaning the investigation. They're going to talk about the bias that existed, the abuse and bias that existed. This is, imagine, the most powerful people within the FBI and the Department of Justice now rigging an investigation to allow their favored candidate to get off scot-free when any other American would have been put in jail. Any other American would have been charged with obstructing justice, would have been charged with violating the Espionage Act. And we've highlighted a lot of those cases before. You know, first you have Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Now you got Agents 1 and Agents 5. Apparently they're lovebirds as well. And I guess that is even more shocking is the things that they're saying. You know, Agent 1, one of the key players in the investigation. More bias in Hillary's favor and more anti-Trump sentiment. These are the top key players in all of this. It's not just Strzok and Page. And a few days before the, you know, Clinton confab, or remember when this is all heading into July and heading into the conventions in 2016, you know, his instant message in which he's complaining about how many agents and attorneys were prepping for the questioning. You know, very aggravating, making this flow with 20 plus voices for, you know, disparate information anyway. And as the message goes on, he suggests that he has a certain lack of enthusiasm for doing his job, which is to look into the crimes that Hillary we know committed. We have nothing, shouldn't even be interviewing Clinton. And by the way, just in case his girlfriend didn't savvy the full extent of the disgruntlement here, or the prospect of interviewing Hillary, which was done by another Trump hater, Clinton lover, Peter Strzok, you know, my God, I'm actually starting to have embarrassment sprinkled on my disappointment. Ever been forced to do something you're adamantly opposed to doing? Well, this is what their job is. And from what we know, none of these people have been fired here. And asked about the IG, by the IG about these comments, Agent 1 insisted he meant he hadn't meant his message. I don't want it to make it sound like there was no reason to interview her. As for explaining, he was adamantly opposed. His memory gives out in this investigation. And then you get the heartfelt string of missives between Agent 1 and Agent 5 on Election Day. You should know. I'm with her. Other comments from Agent 1 shows he has no interest whatsoever in digging up any more evidence that would create any problems for Hillary Clinton. This is the most meaningless thing I've ever done. People acting like, you know, it's blanking 9/11. I don't care about it. I think it's a continued waste of resources and time and focus. It's just so obvious how pointless this exercise is. And then when the IG put him on the spot, you know, guys, this was primarily used as a personal conversation venting mode for me. I'm embarrassed by it, but I'm only humbled so far. I don't think that it affected my actions. And then the other agent sent a message to Agent 1 on February 9th, 2016, griping about the Hillary investigation, the mid-year work, as we call it, that she was given to do. Agent 1 messaging back to commiserate. Yeah, I hear you. You know, you guys have a S word, task, and same word, environment, to look for something conjured up in a place where you can't find it for a case that doesn't matter and is predestined. Predestined. Oh, we already have the answer. Oh, why are we doing the investigation? Because we all know Agent 1 was adamant that the fix was in. And that goes back to Peter Strzok's message. Destroy Trump. We're going to destroy him. We're going to get him. And we have an insurance policy if he gets by us. Then you got Agent 4, you know, proclaiming that the fix being in here, what we want to do and what we're going to be allowed to do are two different things. Asked about that quote by the IG, Agent 1 suffered a temporary bout of amnesia. Sounds like they learned well from the person that they wanted elected to be president. unable to remember what he'd been talking about. What he did know was that he had merely been venting. That's all. And it seems the fix was in not just for Hillary, but every one of her enablers. Because in February 2016, Agent 1 had just interviewed Hillary's personal IT guy. The agent had this exchange with a fellow FBI employee. How did the witness go? Agent 1, awesome. He lied his ass off. Went from never inside the SCIF, sensitive compartmented information facility, to look in when it was being construed to remove trash twice, to troubleshoot, to secure facts with Hillary Rodham Clinton a couple of times, to every time there was a secure fax, I did it with Hillary Rodham Clinton. You know, it would be funny if he was, if the only guy charged in this deal, if he was it. Agent one, I know. Even if he said the truth and didn't have a clearance when handling the secure fax. You know, ain't no one going to do the S word. Agent five didn't share, you know, did her share of texting too, joking with Agent one. Donald Trump supporters in Ohio, this is their word, quote, retarded. That's what they write. She sneered that she didn't know who was worse, Trump, the FBI, or the average American public. Come Election Day, she proclaimed that should Hillary lose, I'm going to be walking around with both my guns and likely quitting on the spot. And then she said, screw you, Trump. Agent 5 texted while at work. Woohoo! That's everybody at the top. Everybody involved in this. Do you understand that they all interfered with an election? Talking about Russian interference? We have the evidence of interference. Let's listen in on Lindsey Graham and his questions.
He was, in essence, the lead investigator.
Okay, yeah. So the head guy looking at Clinton on August the 8th says, we got to stop Trump. Now, was that just idle talk? A week later, here's what they say to each other. Strzok text message to Lisa Page. I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. Now, that's a week later. Who's Andy?
Our understanding, it was Andy McCabe, the deputy director.
So you got the deputy director meeting with the lead investigator of the Clinton email investigation, and Miss Page, who's involved somehow, meeting in Andy's office discussing taking out an insurance policy to make sure Donald Trump doesn't become president? Is that what you're telling us?
I'll be clear. I can't speak to whether Mr. McCabe was there or not.
Did you ask Mr. McCabe?
We did. He said he was not. He did not recall.
So one of them's lying. So I want you to reopen this investigation and come back and tell us, do you believe Strzok or do you believe McCabe? Because you just told me the deputy director of the FBI says he's not the Andy.
Just to be clear, they're talking about a conversation in his office.
Yeah.
He's claiming, he is stating he does not recall whether he was there or not. And neither of those individuals are putting him in the middle of their conversation.
All I'm saying is that the Andy's office where this occurred, he wasn't there. What did Strzok? Did Strzok say he was there?
Strzok says he was there.
Well, somebody's lying. So anyway, we'll figure that out later. None of this is normal, folks. Let's look at the actual interview itself. How many people were involved in the Clinton interview on July the 2nd?
There were, I believe, 6 or 8 people present, but 2 agents conducting the interview.
So as I understand it, there were 2 agents and 2 prosecutors.
Correct.
Okay. Now, this was an email sent in February 2016 from Page to McCabe. Mm-hmm. Hey, you've surely already considered this, but in my view, our best reason to hold the line at 2 and 2 agents and 2 prosecutors, is she might be our next president. How did you feel about that?
We were concerned about it, and we lay out here why we were concerned.
Okay, let's keep talking about this interview. One of the FBI agents in the interview said on Election Day to another FBI agent, you should know that I'm with her. Now, her was Clinton, right?
Correct.
How do you feel about that?
Very concerned.
Okay, eventually very concerned gets to be enough already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very concerned, you know, I'm glad I don't text and email. That's one thing I'm glad I don't do. But have you ever proved a case by circumstantial evidence, Director Ray?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to write you a letter and talk about why you should reconsider your findings as to whether or not it affected the investigation. Here's what Miss Page said on March the 4th, 2016. God, Trump is a loathsome human. How do you feel about that? I mean, she's entitled to her opinion.
I think we've laid out here why we were so concerned about it.
Well, when you add it all up, as early as March, these people hated Trump, and this investigation was anything but by the book. And at the end of the day, what Comey did just blows me away as much as it does y'all. And I can't believe that this happened to my FBI. I told you the story, Mr. Ray, Director Ray, about wanting to be part of the organization, and y'all were smart enough not to take me. The bottom line is, if you're on our side of the aisle, this really does hit you hard. And we can't just write it off. I think there was a lot of bias that did affect an investigation that is, to me, almost impossible to explain using any standard that I grew up with as a prosecutor or even as a defense attorney. This is Strzok to Page on October 20th. Trump is an effing idiot. The bottom line is, I'm glad you found what you found, Mr. Horwitz. I'm not buying that the Clinton email investigation was on the up and up. And the reason I'm not buying it is because the two people intimately involved, one, the guy, the lead investigator, clearly did not want to see Donald Trump become president of the United States. Finally, do you agree with me that finding her liable criminally would be inconsistent with stopping Donald Trump? If they found Hillary Clinton was criminally liable, that paves the way for Donald Trump. Can you put those two things together?
I guess it would depend when, but yes, I could see conceivably
July,
it could.
Or the convention?
Oh, it clearly could conceivably.
Well, not only clearly conceivably, that's exactly what's happening here, folks. Mm-hmm. You cannot hold her criminally liable and stop him. As to the law, why did they change gross negligence in the original statement, Director Ray, to reckless disregard?
I think I would defer to the Inspector General who looked into that.
Why did they do that?
The explanation was that...
Can I just suggest something?
Yeah.
Gross negligence is a criminally liable standard.
Correct.
So if they had said it the way they originally wrote
we'll
it...
We'll come back to this. All of this, what you just heard, is familiar to you. Because this is what we've covered, and this is what we have highlighted, and this is what is so transparent and obvious. They fixed the investigation to get Hillary, a guilty party, off the hook and hurt Donald Trump. There's no debate any longer on it.
The committee has yet to receive the two non-public sections of the report. One is classified, the other is described as quote unquote law enforcement sensitive. I would appreciate if both of the witnesses here today would work to ensure the committee receives these as soon as possible. The committee also invited former Attorney General Lynch, former FBI Director Comey, and former Director McCabe, Deputy Director McCabe, to testify today. Mr. McCabe's lawyer wrote that his client would rely on his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination to avoid answering any questions here today. Mr. Comey's attorney tells us he's out of the country, although I saw he was in Iowa over the weekend. According to his Twitter feed, he seems to be having a wonderful time. This is the second time since he was fired that Mr. Comey refused an invitation to testify here voluntarily. He has time for book tours and television interviews, but apparently no time to assist this committee which has primary jurisdiction over the Justice Department. Ms. Lynch also chose not to show up. The need for transparency does not end when senior officials are fired or quit.
Okay, so the head guy looking at Clinton on August the 8th says we got to stop Trump. Now, was that just idle talk? A week later, here's what they say to each other. Strzok text message to Lisa Page. I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way he gets elected, but I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40. Now, that's a week later. Who's Andy?
Our understanding, it was Andy McCabe, the deputy director.
So you got the deputy director meeting with the lead investigator of the Clinton email investigation, and Ms. Page, who's involved somehow, meeting in Andy's office discussing taking out an insurance policy to make sure Donald Trump doesn't become president? Is that what you're telling us?
I'll be clear. I can't speak to whether Mr. McCabe was there or not.
Did you ask Mr. McCabe?
We did. He said he was not. He did not recall.
So one of them's lying. So I want you to reopen this investigation and come back and tell us, do you believe Strzok or do you believe McCabe? Because you just told me the deputy director of the FBI says he's not the Andy.
Oh, he don't. Just to be clear, they're talking about a conversation in his office.
Yeah.
He's claiming, he is stating he does not recall whether he was there or not. And well, neither of those individuals are putting him in the middle of their conversation.
All I'm saying is that the Andy's office where this occurred, he wasn't there. What did Strzok? Did Strzok say he was there?
Strzok says he was there.
Well, somebody's lying. So anyway, we'll figure that out later.
All right. That, of course, from the hearings are still ongoing. Even as we speak, we're pulling it all together for you. The IG, the Inspector General for the DOJ, that would be Michael Horowitz, and also the FBI Director Wray. Orrin Hatch ripped the FBI director, accusing him of trying to minimize all these issues at the FBI. I'd have to say I actually agree with that. And Lindsey Graham basically affirming everything that we have uncovered and said to you repeatedly that had taken place. And, you know, it's interesting to watch Horowitz putting emphasis on the fact that the report focuses on key events and did not investigate the decisions that were made. Okay, so then what's the point? And then we see that it's not just Strzok and Page and Comey and McCabe, but, you know, there's five people total involved in having an open hostility towards then candidate Trump and openly supporting Hillary Clinton. And I don't think anybody can walk away from all of this information and conclude anything other than they rigged the investigation in Hillary Clinton's favor and that they had nothing but pure hostility towards Donald Trump. Nor can you dismiss the double standard and the white glove treatment for Hillary. And then Donald Trump gets the book thrown at him and every aggressive prosecutorial tactic that they can think of is being used to hurt him, both then as, well, candidate and then president-elect and now as president, when you compare it to the Russia investigation. Newt Gingrich is with us. He has another best-selling book. It just hit bookstores. It's called Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. And he will be, by the way, at Barnes & Noble in Ashburn, Virginia tonight at 7 o'clock. He's given a speech and a book signing there. Mr. Speaker, welcome back. And I think it's obvious that from the very beginning, listening to the hearings today, everything that we said, everything that we told people, everything we investigated and reported has now been proven true. What do you make of it in light of the IG report?
Well, first of all, you're right. And if they gave out Pulitzer Prizes for talk show hosts, you would be earning one for the most accurate and insightful coverage of this entire national scandal.
By the way,
been going on now for 3 or 4 years.
It's horrible, and I wish I was wrong, but they literally treated her, they gave her special treatment where anybody else in America would be indicted. That's not equal justice under the law or equal application of our laws.
No, and I think you have got to look carefully at the depth of what we're dealing with here. I suspect that the length of time it took to get the Inspector General's report out was because Rosenstein and others were pressuring the Inspector General to tone down the report. And this, I mean, this is the toned down version in which he carefully states facts that they couldn't get him to fudge on, but he doesn't draw any conclusions. So as I understand it, you know, he has one guy who I think is unnamed who says viva la resistance after Trump wins. As you point out, he has Strzok saying, you know, we're going to guarantee he never gets to the White House. You have Strzok saying the president personally wants to get briefed on this, meaning Obama. Now, you go through those things and you think to yourself, I mean, how much clearer does it have to get? And what you have, of course, is a desperate effort by the deep state to protect itself from what's going to be an increasingly angry country. There's one topic I'd like to drill down on and hopefully get either Grassley or Goodlatte to really dig into, and that is to find the series of documents that led them to give immunity to the guy who used a hammer on the cell phones and used bleach bit on the hard drives. And why did he get immunity? I mean, I think just getting us to understand in that one fixed case, how could they possibly conclude that that was not willful destruction of evidence and a deliberate effort to protect Hillary in violation of the law? And I think that's the kind of thing as we keep, you remember I've been saying now for 6 or 8 months, they're going to keep peeling back the onion. You're going to see more and more things unravel, and each one's going to lead to something else. And I think that this is going to become, and you heard it again just now with Lindsey Graham, who's basically frustrated because they're still hiding stuff.
Well, look at all the other agents. This isn't Strzok and Page. You know, one agent adamant the fix was in. Another agent laughing that Hillary's IT guy lied his ass off in the interview with him. Screw you, Trump. Another agent, I'm going to be walking around with both my guns and likely quitting on the spot if Donald Trump wins. I mean, and it goes on from there. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Well, remember that among political contributions in 2016, 97% of the Justice Department donations went to Hillary Clinton. And remember that this also extends into the Mueller investigation, because one of his most aggressive lawyer was at Hillary's victory party, which turned out not to work very well. But he was there that night.
That's Andrew Weissman. You know, and then you have Jeannie Ray, who worked on the Clinton Foundation. And then you have, you don't have equal application under the law, Mr. Speaker. That's a problem in America.
Well, and I think it's something we've got to keep digging into and tearing apart and forcing more and more facts to come to the surface. And then people, I think, will gradually have to render judgment. But I think the president's involved. I think the attorney general was involved. It's quite clear the head of the FBI was involved. And it's clear that it reached down into the very senior ranks. And again, out of the thousands of FBI agents, we're talking about a handful who were clearly doing things that are, I think, frightening. I mean, this is not just, there have always been problems, and you always have a danger of police powers being used inappropriately. But when you get to the highest level of the American system, and a new president can be explicitly being undermined and potentially destroyed by the police power of the state, that's really sobering about how sick the system has gotten.
You know, you even have the lead investigator, we learn in this report, not Strzok, but the lead investigator calling Hillary president. I'm done interviewing the president. This is when they finally interviewed Hillary, just 3 days before they exonerated her. But the exoneration letter was written in May. This is July of 2016. Quote, you interviewed the president? You know, Hillary Rodham Clinton, future president. Trump can't win. Demographics don't line up. America's changed. And that's how they viewed it. And they also, there was the one exchange between Strzok and Page beyond calling Trump loathsome and every name they can think of, where they said, well, you don't want to piss her off when you interview her. Go in there with kid gloves on. You know, don't go in there ready to go for bear here.
Yeah, look, that's an important thing for people to remember. The Clintons have a long history of being vindictive and being very, very tough. And everybody in the Justice Department, everybody, assumed Hillary was the next president. So they're dealing with this thing. I mean, she's doing things that are so obviously not just absurdly breaking the law. But you go back and look at some of those early press conferences where she talks about she doesn't know what bleach bit is, and is that something you use in the kitchen? And she goes to a whole bunch of seemingly cute comments, which are actually, I think, indications of how really over the top she's gotten in thinking she can get away with this.
Yeah, look, there's a certain arrogance there that nobody can deny. I mean, you know, at this point, I mean, I don't think there's any other option here. Where is Jeff Sessions? Where's the special prosecutor to probe how his Department of Justice now, how his FBI? I mean, I found Director Wray, and I agree with him. I mean, he went out and he defended all the good work that the FBI does. And I've always said this isn't the rank and file. I think actually the rank and file will be the heroes here. But there's such an abuse of power in all of this. And the idea that Peter Strzok, that's now the leading, one of the top guys at human resources at the FBI, because he hasn't lost his job, that they're going to retrain people is somehow the answer, isn't the answer. They literally helped fix it.
Right.
They helped rig an investigation, a presidential investigation, to support one candidate who should have been indicted and then hurt any way they could another candidate. And then that raises questions. What do we do with the Mueller probe?
Well, but let's go through step by step here. First of all, they should go through and fire all the people who were engaged in doing things that were illegal or totally inappropriate. They should be gone. Second, and some of those, I think, are obviously going to face various criminal charges. Second, the number one job of the FBI and the Justice Department right now should be cleaning up its own house. So I'm glad they do lots of good things. I agree with you, they do lots of good things. That's not the number one job of the new director. The number one job of the new director is getting at the truth about what happened, how did it happen, who did it, and what do we need to do to clean it up?
Remember, so this was about stopping Trump. The words were said. No, was he going? He's never going to become president, right? No, we'll stop it. And then we have an insurance policy.
Remember, it's also about saving Hillary.
Well, that's stopping Trump by saving Hillary in the first place.
Right. I'm just saying. So they have two things going on in their heads. They're going to save Hillary because she's going to be the next president. And they're going to stop Trump because he's too horrible to contemplate. And they're working both sides of the street. So Hillary's people can get away with anything and do. I mean, it is astonishing what they refuse to investigate when it comes down to everything she'd been doing and her staff had been doing.
We've got to take a quick break here. Newt Gingrich is, by the way, he's going to be in Virginia tonight giving a speech and a book signing, Barnes & Noble in Ashburn, Virginia, Trump's America, the truth about our nation's great comeback, Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. Quick break. We'll talk more about that at 7 o'clock tonight. If you want to go, we'll put it up on our website. All right, at the bottom of the hour, Sarah Carter and attorney David Shum will be with us reacting to these hearings. Newt Gingrich is with us. New book is out, Trump's America, the truth about our nation's great comeback. New York Times bestseller, just out last week. And by the way, he'll be at Barnes & Noble in Ashburn, Virginia tonight at 7 o'clock. What's the reaction to the book? And are you going to be talking about this tonight?
Well, look, it's been a great reaction to the book. The first half talks about what we have accomplished. The second half talks about the great challenges ahead. There's a strong chapter on space, and I note today that the president indicated we're going to set up a brand new space organization that will be designed to give us absolute leadership in space in terms of military and national security. So I think there's a lot. The people who have read the book, many of them have said it's maybe the...
I've got a break. Hey, listen, you're welcome to stay. Do you want to take some questions from our audience?
Sure.
You're very welcome.
Sure.
All right, we'll take a break. More with Newt Gingrich. He's at Barnes & Noble, Ashburn, Virginia, tonight, 7 o'clock. He'll take your calls next, 800-941-SHAWN.
11-8-2016, you think by FBI Agent 1, you think HRC is going to win, right? You think we should get some nails and boards in case she doesn't? Same day, FBI Agent 5, she better win. Otherwise, I'm going to be walking around with both of my guns. day after the election, 11-9-2016, FBI attorney 2, I am numb. FBI attorney 2 later, same day, I am so stressed about what I could have done differently. Last one, day after the election, FBI attorney 2, I just can't imagine the systematic disassembly of the progress we have made over the last 8 years. The Affordable Care Act is gone. Who knows if the rhetoric about deporting people, walls, and crap is true. Honestly feel like there's going to be a lot more gun issues, too. General, do you believe in the Tooth Fairy?
Nope.
Do you believe in the Easter Bunny?
Nope.
Do you honestly believe that the American people are going to look at this report and look at those emails and not believe that there was bias and people acting on bias and that the fix was in at the FBI?
I completely understand the concern, Senator, and that's why we've laid all this out here, and that's why we found that it impacts the credibility of the handling of the investigation. And the what we say here is not, as Senator Crapo mentioned, which is that there was no bias, but rather what we were asked to look at was whether the specific decisions we reviewed were affected by bias.
How can you conclude anything else? Because the bias was pervasive all through the investigation at the highest level of investigators in this case. You know, the people that I can't wait to hear from are the rank and file that are just disgusted at how all of this was handled. 24 now till the top of the hour. Glad you're with us. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. We're going to get to your calls here. Newt Gingrich is with us. Brand new book is out. Bestseller already, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. He's going to be at the Barnes & Noble speaking and signing tonight in Ashburn, Virginia. It's up on my website if you want the exact location, Hannity.com. I listened to that, and I listened. You know, Ray is very, it's almost like he's being clever. On the one hand, he's saying that, there's no political bias that we found impacting the decision, but his entire report exposes political bias at the highest levels, and it is rampant.
You know, what I'm struck by is, if you're a prosecutor, you take the data we already have, and you know the case you're going to present to the jury. If you're a defense lawyer, you take the case we have, and you know what you're going to present to the jury. And what you get out of the top guys at the Justice Department are defense lawyers. They're saying to us, well, maybe they said all these crazy things. Maybe they behaved all these crazy ways. Maybe they were really too soft on Hillary. Maybe they've been too aggressive on Trump. But after all, we can't look into their hearts. So we really can't tell you. I mean, this is crazy. And no reasonable person, I think, can believe that this is, in fact, an acceptable way to do things. And I really do think that Attorney General Sessions at some point has to seize control of this. I mean, it is an embarrassment. And again, I'm sure that Mr. Wray is doing everything he can to clean up the FBI, at least at its image. But he's not doing everything he can to clean up the FBI. He's not firing the people. He's not cooperating with Congress. He's not making sure the information gets to the House and Senate members and to the American people who deserve, you know, to know exactly what was going on.
We're going to take calls for the speaker. We'll start in Orlando, our affiliate down there, News Radio 96.5. Jeff is in Orlando. Jeff, hi. How are you? Glad you called. You're on with Newt Gingrich. What's going on?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, sir.
Good. I wanted to ask Mr. Speaker, does he believe that Trump has really exposed that both parties are really a bunch of people that are all in the same club, and they keep their power, and whatever's best for them, if it trickles down to us, that's one thing, but it's never about what's best for us as the people, that they're all in the same old club. One side is all liberal, one side claims to be conservative, but most of them are in the same club. The way Sessions just is a no-show, and now the way Mr. Gowdy is changing the way he speaks because it's messing up the big club.
You know, I don't think that's what's happening. I can appreciate your feeling that way, and certainly If you look at some of the never-Trump Republicans, they fit exactly your description. But if you look at for example, Senator Grassley, as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, he has been very firm. Congressman Goodlatte, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman Nunes, who has shown great courage and stood up when he was under enormous pressure. So I think it's a little more complicated than your description. And I do think that it's fair to say that there is there are people really trying to get to the truth who are really troubled by this. I don't fully understand what Trey Gowdy is saying, but he comes out of a background of having been a U.S. attorney, having been a prosecutor.
Well, Gowdy's taken a very, just to let you know, Mr. Speaker, he's taken a very, very hard line as it relates to this and vowed over the weekend to use the full arsenal of constitutional weapons to get the documents that had been subpoenaed by Congress. And finally, apparently, I'm being told by my sources that he had a meeting with Rosenstein and others, and the Freedom Caucus deserves a lot of credit, too. They're saying they're going to start the impeachment process if the DOJ doesn't start turning over the documents that they have now demanded and subpoenaed for a long time that has been obstructed.
Yeah, I saw Gowdy on one show Sunday, and he was very tough and very clear, and I think was saying exactly the right things. And apparently, Speaker Ryan hosted a meeting where he and Gowdy were both extremely tough with the administration and indicating that the House is just, you know, the House is going to absolutely insist on this right of oversight, which, of course, is central to our constitutional system. I mean, all these people worry about Donald Trump somehow doing something inappropriate. It's the Justice Department. It's the FBI, which has been doing the things that are inappropriate. It is the deep state and the executive branch, not the Congress, which has been the problem here. And I think, you're getting more and more pressure. You'll notice in the Senate hearings today, you had Senator Grassley and others really pushing them about when they're going to keep this thing done and get the information they deserve to hear.
I said it immediately when I was reading it. I was in Singapore and I was reading it. We had about an hour to read this report before it came out, and we were sifting through it all throughout the show, is that this is the swamp protecting the swamp. And Inspector General Horowitz says, all right, well, that's not our role to second guess the decision making and the prosecutorial decisions. But this is just an irrefutable fact, is that no American that did what Hillary did would have gotten away with what she got away with. And now we know the people at the top level of the investigation were the ones protecting her that had a massive political hatred for Trump and a love for her.
Well, and I want to go back to what may require an additional investigation, but because I raised this earlier in the show today, I think the most interesting and impossible to explain decision was granting full immunity to the guy who was using a hammer to break up phones and using bleach bit to destroy the hard drive of computers. And he gets full immunity?
Did you see?
I mean, I really want to see the paper trail that led to that decision.
So 2 weeks ago, and I know you've been busy and you've been out on your book tour. 2 weeks ago, I'm on the television program and I say in the monologue, now if it was the day that Robert Mueller insisted that anybody that he was investigating hand over their phones. And I said, well, if big word, I had suggested to those people that they might want to delete the emails and acid wash the hard drive with bleach bit and have an aide bust up their devices into itsy bitsy pieces and remove the SIM cards and hand it over to Robert Mueller and say the words Hillary Clinton, equal justice under the law. I said, look, I said, it's not going to work out well for you. It would be a dumb idea. And I also said, I'm kidding. I don't mean for you to do this. And the amount of outrage by the left saying that Hannity's trying to obstruct justice. Well, I said, I'd never said to do it. I was obviously being sarcastic. And the outrage over the fact that I might say that to somebody was, I think, it illustrates how bad it is because they wanted to throw me in jail for what she actually had done.
You know, it does make you think maybe we ought to put together the Hillary Clinton defense paper that lists everything that she did and says maybe this ought to be the new standard.
Well, if it, but, that, but that's the point.
That is the point. I mean, it clearly can't be the new standard. It clearly was illegal. And if you're going to have the rule of law, you can't let people get away with this. But that is precisely what they were doing in the Justice Department.
It's
they
amazing.
Were allowing a potential president to yep. get away with things that were stunningly corrupting.
You know, Mark said the other day, Levin, the great one, he actually said that what happened here is much worse. There's more interference by the FBI in our last election than was ever that the Russians could have ever dreamed of doing. There was election interference. And on top of it, Hillary did pay for a Russian propaganda through funneled money through a law firm into Fusion GPS, into a foreign national who in an interrogatory said that his dossier, well, maybe is 50-50 because it wasn't really vetted. Then that became the basis of a FISA warrant.
Look, I think it's clear if you look at the more we learn, had the justice system operated the way it should have, she could never have become the Democratic nominee.
Ever. Correct.
Ever. But she wouldn't even become the nominee. You'd have had a wide open race
right.
for the nomination because she would have been literally driven out of politics by the totality of her corruption.
Any other American would go to jail, which was my point. If you hand over your phones to Robert Mueller in itsy bitsy pieces, good luck to you. You're done. You're finished. And
right.
then,
but this tells you, look, this tells you why the people like Strzok were doing what they were doing. They all believed she would win, and they all believed the corruption would continue.
Let's get back to our phones. Lloyd is in Columbus, Ohio, for Speaker, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Lloyd, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Good afternoon, Speaker, and I do appreciate you taking the call. Most of Americans, including myself, feel very disingenuous against what's happening. You've got the prosecutor, who's the DOJ, in there, and they are... they've got both people, the FBI director basically said that, you know, he's more concerned about the employees, the judges, the prosecutors instead of the American public. I think the American public is the ones that they work for. The American public wants the truth. And we don't want politics in justice.
No, look, you are 100% right. And the fact is, you can't have a justice system without justice. The whole process, if you think about it for a second, don't tell me you care about the morale of your employees if that means you're going to protect people who are breaking the law. I don't want people who are breaking the law to have high morale. I want them to be worried. I mean, I think they should have. You know, the fact that the McCabe is taking the Fifth Amendment tells you something. The fact that Comey won't even dignify by trying to show up. I mean, you know, the degree to which Comey is lying to the whole country and is arrogantly assuming we're all too stupid to know what he's doing is sort of breathtaking.
Do you know what everybody says? The Clintons always get away with it, Mr. Speaker. Always. No matter, the evidence could be overwhelming, incontrovertible. The double standard, it can't be any more clear. A two-tiered justice system, no equal application under the law, and the Clintons skate. I mean, from my mind, knowing what we know, she should be charged today.
Yes, I think she should be charged. I think her associates should be charged. But I have to say, at the risk of maybe being inappropriately lighthearted about this, on the other hand, every day she and Bill have to look at each other and realize she lost. She'll never be president. He'll never be back in the White House. It's over. And that living that out the rest of their life may be as great a punishment as anything you and I can imagine.
All right, Speaker Gingrich, his book signing tonight, Barnes & Noble. It's in Ashburn, Virginia, and it's in 2 hours and 10 minutes. If you want to head on over, he'll be giving a speech and a book signing, Barnes & Noble, Ashburn, Virginia. It's up on my website right now, Hannity.com. His bestseller just out, Trump's America, The Truth About Our Nation's Great Comeback. And by the way, the admonitions and warnings, including fake news. For the president that he has to deal with this crap every day. Mr. Speaker, have fun tonight at Barnes & Noble. Thank you for taking some calls and spending a little extra time with us. We appreciate it. All right, news roundup, information overload, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. I mean, some of these senators have been amazing. I will say Lindsey Graham was amazing today. Senator Ted Cruz is now asking really important questions of the Inspector General Horowitz, and let's dip in and listen to what he's asking.
That this is under the scope of the special counsel. This has nothing to do with Russia collusion or anything else. This is a question of did the director of the FBI perjure himself to this committee? That's not within Special Counsel Mueller's jurisdiction, is it?
Whether the director of the FBI, I don't know what's within the scope of Special Counsel.
Well, you're declining to answer a question because right. You say there's an ongoing
right.
investigation.
And I can't.
I'm trying to understand what investigation arguably covers the emails demonstrating whether or not the director of the FBI committed perjury.
And I can't answer that question without describing an ongoing investigation.
So it's your position you're not going to describe any investigation, but you'll decline to answer any questions because there might be some investigation that might implicate it?
No, what I'm testifying to is that the questions you're asking, I know for a fact, implicate matters that I can't describe without implicating an ongoing investigation.
All right, let's shift to Mr. Horowitz. Let's go a little bit deeper into the issue you brought up with Senator Coons about the potential of bias in the investigation. Your conclusion was that the agents involved in the conduct, quote, brought discredit to themselves, sowed doubt about the FBI's handling of the investigation, and impacted the reputation of the FBI. There were approximately 15 full-time agents and analysts staffed on this investigation. Is that correct?
I don't, as I sit here, I'm not sure the exact number. It could well have been that number. It was a lot and probably around that number.
And Deputy Assistant Director Peter Strzok was assigned to the investigation in August of 2015 and was placed in charge of supervising the day-to-day operations.
My understanding is he was, in essence, leading the investigation.
So the agent leading the investigation, is it true that during the period of the investigation in late 2015 and in 2016, when Mr. Strzok was in charge, he used an FBI device to call President Trump a, quote, effing idiot, although I don't believe he abbreviated it, a loathsome human and a disaster?
Correct.
Did he also say multiple times that Donald Trump, quote, cannot be president?
Correct.
And on August 6, 2016, when FBI counsel Lisa Page said to Strzok that, quote, maybe you're meant to stay where you are because you're meant to protect the country from that menace, meaning President Trump, did Mr. Strzok reply that I can protect our country at many levels?
He did.
And 2 days later, when counsel Lisa Page asked Mr. Strzok whether Donald Trump would ever become president, did Strzok reply, quote, no, he's not. Will stop it.
Correct.
And is it true that there are many similar statements by Mr. Strzok in the report?
That's correct. And indeed, you could go on to August 15, 7 days later, which was of concern to us as well, referencing an insurance policy.
Now, according to the report, beyond Mr. Strzok and Lisa Page, there were at least three other FBI employees involved in the Hillary Clinton email investigation that showed animus. For example, they called President Trump an effing idiot again, and they called his supporters a slur for the intellectually disabled that I won't repeat in this committee. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Does any of that conduct give one confidence in fairness or impartiality in the enforcement of justice?
I think it undercuts confidence precisely as we said.
Now, you referred to former Congressman Anthony Weiner's laptop. It's correct that the FBI discovered the presence of thousands of emails related to the Clinton investigation on September 27th, 2016. How long did Deputy Director McCabe and Director Comey know about the emails that were potentially relevant to the Clinton administration and do absolutely nothing about it?
So Deputy Director McCabe was aware on September 28th, the next day, and was notified on multiple ways and multiple occasions, as well on September 29. There was follow-up about that by Strzok and others. And between September 29 and October 24 or 25, there was no activity by the mid-year team or FBI headquarters And in fact, it was only reinstigated on October 21 when the New York field office went to the Southern District of New York and said, no one's doing anything about this.
So nearly a month.
Nearly
Thank
a
you,
month.
Mr. Horowitz.
And I'll just to clarify Please. Also, if I could, it's unclear exactly what and when Director Comey knew, because there is testimony from Deputy Director McCabe that he briefed him on it somewhere in that late September, early October time period, but he also referred to it as a flyby briefing. And I think in an area like this, you need to be careful, as I'm guessing Director Ray could testify to, when you're managing 37,000 people, it's unclear whether it's fair to hold someone accountable in that position if they only got a flyby briefing. So that's why I'm hesitant to speak on that.
Thank you.
I think you folks can be out of here in 5 minutes.
All right, let me get to Sarah Carter, investigative reporter, Fox News contributor, David Schoen, civil liberties attorney, criminal rights attorney. Sarah, you've been watching this all day, as I have been. The facts are indisputable. Hillary committed crimes, obstructed justice, and now we have, as Senator Cruz was saying, five at least FBI agents on record hating Trump and wanting Hillary to be exonerated. Of the 15 full-time?
Well, I think this is what's so incredible, this hearing. What we're getting out of it, and I think what's most important, is the fact that there was this two-tier justice system. And it's so stark. And I think Senator Grassley, his opening statement and questions throughout, and I also agree with you, Sean, on the fact that Senator Graham also made such an important statement, you know, in this hearing. And now we're hearing more right now from Senator Cruz. But the fact that there was such an extraordinary bias, I mean, and Grassley goes through point by point. He talks about under Lynch that Comey drafted a public exoneration of Clinton before 17 key witnesses were interviewed. Under Rosenstein, no one seriously thinks Robert Mueller would plan a press conference to exonerate Trump before his investigators' work is done. Then he talks about under Lynch, a low-level IT worker lied to the FBI twice about destroying records under subpoena and then got immunity. Under Rosenstein, a low-level Trump campaign associate provided the wrong date for a conversation with a professor and then got charged with lying to the FBI. Mm-hmm. And it goes on and on and on.
Let me go to the heart of the Inspector General's report, and he's trying to make the case, oh, yeah, we have all this bias, and obviously these things happened, and clearly they favored Hillary and hated Trump. His ridiculous conclusion that they found no documentary or testimonial evidence to show that the prosecutorial discretion, if you will, or the decision not to prosecute Clinton criminally was any product of any political bias is such a reach and so absurd. And if there's ever been an obstruction case, there's nothing more clear than Hillary deleting acid washing, beating up devices. David Schoen.
Yeah, I think the Inspector General really was forced to back off of that conclusion to some degree today. Here's what I think two or three of the major takeaways from today were, and there are a lot of other details. First, the Inspector General acknowledged that the conduct here publicly sows doubt on the FBI, a complete cloud over the integrity of the Clinton email investigation, and he said a huge cloud over the Russia investigation. Two, he said the investigators, including the lead investigator, clearly was politically biased. It can't say otherwise in this case. He says they never should have used those same people for the Russia investigation. But here's the fundamental flaw in his conclusion, and I think he's starting to recognize this. He acknowledged that the entire universe of evidence that the prosecutors made, who made the decision not to indict Hillary Clinton, came from these biased investigators. That means investigators determined what to go after, what to withhold, and what to submit to the decision maker. So the entire decision-making process the entire universe of evidence they relied on was from these investigators. And I think the last point that has to be made now is, you know, people want to say, well, look, Mueller fired Strzok a week after this came out in July. No. The fundamental point is, if we're going to learn anything from this lesson, or it's a complete waste of time, is that we cannot have these kind of people involved in investigations. And what we have with the Mueller team, it may not be Strzok, but it's many people, including everyone on the team, who has the same political agenda and perspective and stripe that Strzok and Page had. They're just more sophisticated.
You know, you go to the point that I think is very key, is the same people. They never should have had the same people that investigated and exonerated Hillary and thread the needle for her and gave her every consideration. The very same people that we are on record hating Trump and loving Hillary, then using the full force of their offices and their power of their positions to just lay hammer after hammer, sledgehammer after sledgehammer against Trump. That's not how it's supposed to work. You treat people equally, and that's not the case.
Even the IG expressed his shock that they would use these same people. Page 328 of the IG report in footnote 181. He expresses their shock that they would use these same people who now supposedly exonerated Clinton, and they transfer them to the Mueller team. And now we know what the email said. By the way, you know, they still haven't ever gotten, this point came out today, they have never gotten the private emails or devices from Strzok and Page.
Unbelievable. Now, does that taint the investigation of Robert Mueller completely, and does it wipe it out, in your opinion?
If you're asking me, 100%. And it's just one more thing that does. But what we know unquestionably is, we've heard from the IG and from everyone else now, you cannot have an investigation with biased investigators. They're the ones who decide what evidence to go after, what to withhold, and what to present. We know now 100% about the team that makes up the Mueller investigation. If there was a huge cloud over the Clinton email investigation, there's a much larger cloud and darker cloud over the Mueller investigation, because it's a team of sophisticated people with the same political agenda.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that what Mr. Schoen is saying right now is absolutely 100% true. And I can tell you, coming from retired and former FBI agents, people who actually left the Bureau because they were so disgusted with what was going on the seventh floor, I was on the phone with them today. They said, look, unless it is completely gutted out, unless Ray is willing to look inside what was happening inside his own Bureau, and then remove people from their positions who were associated with McCabe, who were loyalists to Comey, that there won't be any changes there. There are a lot of people that we're not even talking about, that haven't even been mentioned publicly, that are still there at the FBI and still within the DOJ, that need to be removed, is what I am hearing from my sources. And if we think there was a dark cloud over these investigations, you just have to ask yourself this, Sean. What other investigations were these people involved in that they cut corners and set things up?
I think this sets up for anything that they've been involved in. It will be reexamined based on their political biases. Stay right there. Sarah Carter, David Schoen, both will be on Hannity tonight, as well as Newt Gingrich, Jason Chaffetz, who's been phenomenal on this, Michael Caputo tonight, and Dr. Sebastian Gorka. All right, your call's coming up next half hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program, jump on here. We continue first with Sarah Carter and David Schoen. I guess the issue here is, okay, we're going to hear from FBI rank and file that know a lot more. We're going to hopefully get the documents, Sarah, which, from what I understand, a big showdown took place with Gowdy and with Paul Ryan on Friday and the DOJ. What's the status of that?
As of just 30 minutes ago, Sean, they have not given any documentation. And I can tell you this. They're not going to wait till Friday. I've talked to a number of congressional members and sources on the Hill, and if Rod Rosenstein and the DOJ withhold that documentation, they could expect by as early as Wednesday to possibly file impeachment against Rod Rosenstein. So they're taking this very seriously. Gowdy asked for documentation on Sunday. They didn't provide that on Sunday. Nunes has asked for documentation as well, what they requested in April, which was the classified memorandums and documentation that they put in an email to Director Rod Rosenstein, Deputy Director Rod Rosenstein. They have still refused to turn that over, and as of today, they have not turned anything over. I can tell you this, there is going to be a showdown, a big showdown, before Wednesday if that documentation is not provided.
Interesting. And they've gotten away with it up to this point. Legally, can Hillary Clinton still be prosecuted, David Schoen?
Absolutely. I want to make this point, though. Everything that you said on this show that Sarah Carter has investigated is starting to fall into place more and more. Other things that came out today, by the way, the Inspector General said that what he found validates the firing of Comey. he found that there was a meeting within McCabe's office with Strzok, Page, and McCabe. Now, McCabe denies it, or he doesn't recall it. Strzok says he was there. You can't tell me this was two isolated agents with this kind of agenda. The purpose of the meeting was to stop Trump.
Well, we know that that's a fact because we have all the other agents that have been picked up in these messages, and at least five of the 15 key investigators hated Trump and loved Hillary, and we're talking about putting the fix in for Hillary. So
that's right. And
if we had equal justice under the law, now we'd see the mistake, we'd look at the crime she committed, and she would be prosecuted like Christian Saucier.
And the next point, by the way, that you have made is many times, add to all of this mix the leak intentionally by Comey to Daniel Richmond for a specific agenda. That hasn't even been touched on. Why is all of this important? Because the American special counsel investigation is only as good as what the American people have confidence in. What the American people cannot have confidence in the Mueller investigation with this background, knowing that the Mueller team is far worse and far more sophisticated than Strzok, Page, and McCabe.
All right, thank you both. David Schoen, Sarah Carter, your calls are next. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour on a Monday. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. Boy, it's good to be home. It was 28 hours door-to-door to get home, right, Linda? About 28 hours?
I think mine was a little longer.
Why was yours longer than mine?
I was in traffic forever. I didn't get home till like the afternoon.
That's right. You live out in the wilderness out there somewhere.
That's right.
I hope everybody enjoyed the coverage. Our team is amazing. I mean, 3 a.m. every morning in Singapore. And we didn't miss a beat in terms of any technical glitches that I know of, Jason, right? Or at least you didn't tell me of any.
No, right? It was for Singapore, it was really good. It was really good.
Not easy to pull off at the other side of the world. And amazing stuff. Now, we're just going to take calls this half hour. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. Oh, we should. What were some of the stories I kept saying? Oh, we got to talk about that on Monday. Oh, I got to talk about that on Monday. I think they mostly had to do with Linda, Blair, and Sarah. And do you remember any of the ones that I wanted to make fun of you on?
Well, can we talk about you at the temple?
You can talk about me at the temple. What's wrong with me at the temple? Sarah convinces everybody, all right, it's only 15 minutes away, and I'm not a big tourist when I go out. I'm focused on my job. I said, all right, I'll do one tour.
Okay, I think I need to interrupt because, first of all, you are not a tourist at all. You are the most annoying person to travel with on the planet. This is Sean's idea of tourism. We go, we get in the car. We're in the car 15 minutes. All right, I'm done. I'm ready to go back home. I'm like, we haven't left the car yet, Sean. Yeah, I've seen everything I need to see. I'm good. Send me pictures from wherever you go. I'm good. That's your idea of tourism. Then we get to this beautiful Buddhist temple. It's gorgeous. We could see everything. And literally, all I can see is you going over to where they put their incense sticks. And it's like they take these sticks. They buy them. Therefore, the prayers of the dead. They hold them up to their heads. They pray on them. And they put them into this like big... I don't even know what you would call it. It's just a ginormous cauldron.
No, it's like when I was a kid on the 4th of July, we used to use what's called a punk to light our fireworks, and it smelled just like them. So let's
come back to my story. Okay, first of all, you take the punchline away, and you're telling the story backwards.
No, I'm telling
the story everybody's
truthfully.
Everybody's going up, and they're putting their prayer sticks in of the people that they've prayed for, and they've held them up to Buddha, and they've prayed on them, and then you go over.
How do you know I wasn't praying for people?
Oh, you definitely weren't praying because it wasn't your stick. You took somebody else's stick that they put in.
Their person.
You can't pray on somebody else's prayer.
Well, I can't.
What's the matter with you?
I can't pray for another person. Is that what you're saying?
So Sean takes,
I only have to pray for my
own people. I'm telling the team now. You're a disaster. He takes somebody else's prayer out of the cauldron.
I did.
And he starts smelling it like it's a vanilla, like a vanilla incense stick.
You can't take away their prayer. I was saying a prayer.
Okay, first of all, they put the prayer into this beautiful vase-like thing. It's ginormous.
It's sticking up, and the incense or the punk, it's literally was.
Please don't call it punk. Oh my God.
No, I'm saying so people that know what it smells like. It smelled exactly.
It doesn't matter
like
what
that.
It smells like. It was lit for someone in memory of their loved
and
one
I
who
just
had passed
held
on.
It. How do you know I wasn't?
You take one out, you wave it under your nose, you're smelling it like it's a perfume stick. You take another one out, you wave it under your
That's
nose.
Not exactly.
Security,
true.
Security's at the door just staring at us. I'm like, oh God, we're going to get arrested.
Well, the monk came over and said hello to me. I mean, that was nice.
Yeah, because he's like, hello, clueless American. Why
no,
are you smelling
no,
the prayers of the dead?
It was later, and it was amazing. But Sarah, apparently, there's a tradition where they throw I don't know what the proper
term is. Well, no, We went and did it because,
you went and did it because it wasn't at that temple, that particular temple.
Right, that temple didn't do it. So basically, in the Buddhist religion, the way that they pray is that it's the shaking of the sticks. And on each stick, there is a number written in Chinese. And then that number is specific to you. And then you take it over to the monk. And they read this number and they tell you.
It didn't work out very well for you, did it?
Well, for me, it was no good. But for Sarah, it was fantastic.
What did they say? You're going to die? I mean, that sounds terrible.
It said I was trouble.
Yeah, no kidding.
It actually said I was trouble.
No kidding.
The monk looked at me and he said, you're trouble.
Oh, my God.
You're a problem.
Yeah.
Hate list.
Yeah, it's...
Ethan, you're going so down for that. No, I cannot believe you just flipped
teams. That's probably what the monk was saying.
No, that is not what the monk said. That is not what the monk said.
Well, he said you're trouble. He nailed that part of it.
I think he meant like she shakes things up. She's not happy with the status quo.
All right, you're now a McLaughlin with McLaughlin. I really don't think anything you have to say really at this point is impactful because you have such a bias.
I think Linda should wear that trouble name with a badge of honor.
Okay, trouble was not exactly the thing you want to hear from the monk after you get your number, after you throw
Listen, I got on the carpet on my hands and knees and I prayed and I had this nice Singaporean girl and she came up next to me and she's like, hi, how are you? I said, I'm good. How are you? She goes, good. You're doing it wrong. I said, I am? She says, yeah. I said, okay. I said, can you show me how to do it? I'm like, is that like sacrilegious? She's like, well, what you're doing is way more sacrilegious. So let me show you how to do it. I said, fantastic.
Let me do it. How you doing?
So she sat down next to me. She said, okay, this is how we do it. It was, you know, because it's like an 8-step process.
I wasn't at this part. I only was there 10 minutes and turned around and left.
That's right.
Home.
You never made it to this temple.
Because
you got about 5 minutes in the car.
I was working.
What was I doing? Getting my nails done? Be serious.
I didn't want to eat that much local fare, but they had American restaurants there, and I preferred to go to them. And that was another complaint.
I have to say, first of all, I did not complain.
You were complaining.
I never complained. I never even asked to go. You and your entourage wanted to go. I just came along to liven it up. That's all.
Well, I figure everybody's working long hours and hard, and the best thing I could do is take them out and take them to dinner.
I will say...
Nice to everybody. I don't get credit for being.
You know
nice
what's funny is I was about to pay you a compliment, but you're so busy patting yourself on the back, I can't get a word in edgewise.
Well, so far you've been mean to me.
It's coming. Good things are worth waiting for. So we're on this trip and we're at this restaurant. Sean takes out not just our crew, our TV and radio crew, but everybody else's TV crew, and that were there for the other shows.
The Australian guys,
The Australian guys, the other engineers. Everybody's there, right? So. The waitress comes up to me and she says, she goes, so you work in America? I said, yeah. I said, he's a big shot in America. She goes, oh, no, I know who he is. I said, oh, okay. And she says, he's paying for everything? I said, oh, yeah, he flew his whole team first class. She's like, what? I said, yeah, he flew the whole team first class. And if first class wasn't available, he flew them business class. She's like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, no, I swear to God. And she's like, and now he's paying for all this food? I'm like, yeah, and he does this every day. He takes the whole team out.
So
even if they're
nice
not on
me.
His team, he takes them out.
There's something coming, folks. Go ahead. Keep going.
And she was like, wow, that is incredible. And I said, I know.
You know, the Australian guys were shocked. One guy said to me, I've been in TV 30 years, and apparently, I guess, the people that are on air think that it's perfectly acceptable that you're going to be sitting up in first class and that they're going to be back in steerage, and that is not acceptable to me.
I mean, listen, I ran into lots of folks from the press corps, and every person that I would talk to was like, oh, my God, regardless of whether or not you agree with Sean Hannity or what his political, you know, affiliations are, everybody was like, he's definitely the nicest one. Because I met some of the other anchors, and they had nothing on you.
No, listen, I know what they do. I see what they do. And I just think it would be like taking my family. Okay, you guys sit in the back of the bus and I'll see you later. And I'm going to sit in the front row. That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, no, it was pretty pretty incredible to see how they behaved.
When you consider the amount of time we were on those airplanes, what was it, 21, 2, 3 hours in the air? Just
forever.
In the air. And forget the time to taxi and land and get up to the gate and get to the airport early and go through customs and get the checks and all that stuff. You know what? You're missing some of the stories and my memory just isn't failing me because I'm still half dead.
I got plenty of stories. I got the Dirty Dim Sum story.
You.
That's a good one.
Which one?
Dirty Dim Sum.
I don't know about that one. What's that?
So Dirty Dim Sum, there was this place that was written up in the New York Times, and your TV crew decides that they're going to go. I had no interest in this because I wasn't really eating on this trip. So they go to this restaurant, and it's like packed, right? Everybody's waiting to get in. There's a line out the door. It's like one of those, like, you know, when a new restaurant opens up in New York, so they're like, oh, it's going to be amazing. So they get in there. The place is dirty as all get out. There's carpet. There's stains all over the carpet. and the people are walking around serving this dim sum on a cart, which is normal, but they weren't wearing any shoes. So you had these, I called it the dirty dim sum restaurant because they're walking around on a dirty carpet with no shoes on.
That was a little bit of, I mean, I took everyone to Gordon Ramsay, had a restaurant, one of the local malls. We went there. We found the best local pizza place that was amazing. And I went to McDonald's one day, and that was great for me. And we found a place that had like southern fried chicken and brisket and all that. Barbecue was phenomenal. It was so good.
I think it's interesting that I had to travel to Singapore to get my first taste of grits. I think there's something very strange about
that. Is that the first time you ever taste? I don't like grits. Yes, did you like them?
My God, they were amazing. I was like, this is ridiculous. Really? Yes. I think that we should say, though, that the people of Singapore were absolutely the kindest, most nice. It was just ridiculous how nice they were. And they were nice.
They were amazing. Actually.
They were amazing. It got to the point where you're like, this isn't real. Is this fake? Am I on like a TV show? Like, it's ridiculous how nice they were. They were so kind and just genuine.
Listen, I don't have enough to say about them in terms of being nice and a safe, clean city. It was a beautiful city. I mean, some of the pictures we took when we would go to that local mall that was on the water were amazing. Maybe we'll put up the crew picture that you guys took. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was the Marina Bay Sands. It's beautiful.
Listen, I admit I'm not the tourist, but I had a job to do and I had to work and I had to stay on New York time. And that in and of itself was a challenge. And the day that we interviewed the president, we were up for 22 hours. And then the day we traveled back, I was up for 30 hours. So it gets a little rough sometimes.
Well, I don't know about you, but I had a good time.
And then if you watch you, Sarah Carter and Blair, it's like watching three sixth graders at the school lunch table just cracking up endlessly and you never end on the joke.
But I think a little bit of that was just sheer exhaustion, because sometimes we were laughing at things and like about halfway through laughing, I'm like, okay, it's 4:30 in the morning. I have no idea what we're laughing at.
Well, 4:30 in the morning there was what?
4:30 in the afternoon here.
I know, crazy. All right, let's get to our phones here. It was a good trip. I hope you guys liked the coverage. Patty is in Houston, Texas, KTRH. Hey, Patty, how are you? Glad you called.
Oh, hey, Sean. I'm so glad I could get in. I'm listening to you all the time. Obviously watched all the coverage on Singapore, but you may have addressed this on your night show. I'm not sure. But where were you exactly when Trump was walking outside and alluded to the fact that there was going to be a signing? Because honestly, I was on the edge of my seat and I thought, I wonder where you are right this minute. I mean, were you kind of freaking out about that, or were you thinking,
like everybody else, I mean, everyone says, you're not a journalist, Hannity. Well, I work sources. Part of being a talk show host is the same as what journalists do, except they're not journalists. They're abusively biased. But we do objective news, and I'm working every source I had. I started getting a feeling, and it was nothing more than me just reading the tea leaves that, and I'll tell you what tipped it off. Only thing I got was a call that said that we were going to change the time of the interview with the president and we were moving it up.
Okay.
And when that happened, and that there was going to be a press conference and he was going to hold a press conference, and some were interpreting it, this is a failure. It's actually all going on time. It went according to schedule on time. And then then my sources started letting me know, wow, this is going to be bigger than anybody thinks, and that there was going to be an agreement. And when I spoke to the president, I spoke to him just before he did that early morning press conference, and I was in the room for the press conference. And that's when I knew that they had signed a deal, that the deal was being signed, et cetera, et cetera. So it was good. I mean, this is history. It's amazing that, you know, I had some friends of mine monitoring some coverage, and I will tell you, the fact that the media would put more effort, resources into Stormy Daniels and superfluous issues when you got all of these concessions that have been made by Kim Jong-un, and then say, how dare the president actually get a photo with this man? Well, you know, the guy stopped firing missiles. The guy released hostages. The guy literally, took down one of his nuclear launch sites. The guy's talking now about taking down all of his nuclear launch sites and getting rid of his weapons. And we have a possibility that we didn't have before. And I think it's all because of strength. I don't think any of it was because of weakness. And I think they also fear Trump. I think there is a genuine belief that Donald Trump means what he says, because he does. And I think that played a very big role in it. And in that sense, I think the Iranians are watching, the world is watching. And I think it's, you know, do we want a world where North Korea doesn't have nuclear weapons? Of course we do. Is it better for them? Yeah. Is it better for us? Yeah. Is it better for their people? Absolutely. Is it an opportunity for them to grow their economy and get their people out of poverty that are starving? Yeah. Is that, tell me what's bad about that.
Well, Sean, don't you think everything Trump does is very much intentional? I know that the press would like to make you feel, you know, that, oh, he's just off the cuff, whatever. I don't. I think if he's making Kim Jong-un feel good, he's doing that on purpose. I mean, really, would you go in there and be a jerk and then try to get something accomplished? I don't think so. I just am flabbergasted by it all.
One of the things that's happened, too, is that everybody's getting used to the president. They're getting, you know, it's like certain things. He gave an impromptu press conference. I was in the air at the time with Steve Doocy. And in the press conference, oh, I wish my people would stand like show me the respect that they show Kim Jong-un. And later said, of course, I was kidding. You know, you don't understand sarcasm. And the fact is that the American people, it just is like water off a duck's back. They understand that he moves at the speed of Trump and he wants to get things done. And he's not your typical president. And he's never going to conform into this politically correct establishment animal that people think the president should be. And I think people are now, they're building an affinity because they understand his rhythm more, who he is more. They trust him more. They, in spite of a phony narrative, that they see that he gets things done. And so I think that's a big problem for the Democrats, especially heading into the midterms. Patty, I got to run. Wish I had more time here. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, Fox News. We have the news the rest of the media would never dare cover, not the least of which is all that went down that you didn't see today with the inspector general before the Senate committee. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. We'll break it all down for you. We have tonight Newt Gingrich, Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, Sebastian Gorka, Jason Chaffetz, David Schoen, Michael Caputo. 9 Eastern on Fox. See you then. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.